Well, I'm Siddle Roberts. I came to Woodlesford in 1929. We came in the November 1929. I started school at Woodlesford January 1930. My father was a station master at Woodlesford. We came from a station called Rowell in North Wales, which is R-H-E-W-L. My mother was Mary Davis, so she married my father, who was Robert Harold Roberts. They were married just at the end of the First World War. My father was, at that time, it was a very junior graded station in North Wales, and of course he moved about quite a few until we went to Rowell. But I can't always remember the names of the stations that he worked at. One was on Anglesey. As I say, he came on promotion to Woodlesford in 1929.
Why did he come all that way? Why did he move all the way from Wales to Yorkshire?
Well, the reason was in those days that, depending on which company you were working for, which was the LMS, and prior to that it had been the old L&W, which my grandfather was also a senior member of the L&W, a station master, and it was promotion, the jobs were offered. In those days, they used to say, go and see the place. If you're interested, your chance of promotion will be to that station. Now then, my father came, and my mother, I couldn't say what date, it must have probably been in 1929, they saw the station house at Woodlesford, they must have liked the area, which was pretty rural, and they decided to take the chance and come to Woodlesford.
How old were you then?
I was five in 1930, wasn't I? Obviously, I was born in 1925. So I must have started school before I was five at Woodlesford, which I didn't think was the case in those years, but I must have done anyhow.
What's your first memory? How did you get from North Wales to Woodlesford?
Well, we came by train, obviously. We had to lodge, I just forget the name of the house, but it was in Station Lane, because the house wasn't vacant for us to move in straight away. And our luggage then came in a railway goods truck, a goods van, and we moved in.
Can you remember that journey that you made?
Only very vaguely, because we used to go back to Wales quite a lot to see our relatives, and we used to go in them days, we used to change somewhere around Brighouse. It was a bit unusual, mind you, in Halifax. We then had to get a train to Manchester, which was the old Exchange Victoria stations, and then change at Chester, and then get this train to Rowell, which was via Denby. So it was a long journey, probably 4 or 5 hours at least, with all these changes.
But when you came to Woodlesford with your mum and dad, yeah, can you remember getting off the train and remember what it looked like?
I can't really remember. You know, I was only small, of course. But I do remember that we'd been at Woodlesford a few weeks, and my mother went into Leeds to have a look around at the place. It was so foggy. She came back and she said, what a terrible place. We've made a mistake coming here. She said all I could see was a policeman stood in City Square with a big torch thing in his hand, you know. Anyhow, after a while, she got to like the place, but she was not enamoured with Leeds at all. Anyhow, we all seemed to settle down, and that made friends. I was in the choir at Woodlesford Church, and we all did fairly well at Woodlesford School. We had three sisters.
So paint a picture of what the station itself was like then when you were young in the 1930s.
The station was very, very busy, really was, and it got busier as time went on, particularly on the freight side. The amount of traffic, well, was just unbelievable. And towards the war, of course, it got more than ever. Of course, with coal trains, of course, they were just going through the station. That was not really to do with us, in a way. But there were two or three places in Rothwell who made rope and twines. I think one was called Coates. And all that traffic went from Woodlesford Station. There was also Hulse, which was down near the canal, which made paint for Woolworths. And they used to send paints every day, cartons of this stuff, to all the Woolworths stores throughout the country. That was very busy traffic. There was all the traffic out of the brewery, with trains loaded, bands of beer and you name it, going out nearly every day. With rhubarb, very localised product now, isn't it? Rhubarb. And we used to make a van up, which went to Covent Garden every night, and one to Swansea, I think it was. And that was regular traffic during the rhubarb season. There was Bricks, Armitages, yes, they had a place at Woodlesford, a quarry. And then the Bricks used to go from Woodlesford. Coming into the station, there was the animals, the cows, the sheep, pigs, you name it. All those were coming in from all over. And although I was about 7 or 8 years old, I was always asked if I would help to drive these animals out of the station, which, of course, I thought were wonderful. And we used to take them down Station Lane onto what is now the A642, you know, major road, over the canal, the river, up Bullethorpe Lane. The farmer up there was called Nichols, Johnny Nichols. Particularly the cows, the sheep, we went to various farms. But I know one day I was taking the sheep, there were probably about 30 or 40 in a flock. I think probably only one sheepdog. And when we come over the canal, there's a bit of a space. It's still there to this day. You can get over the canal and go walk down or what, you know. And two other sheep went down, because they chased after them. They jumped in the canal. But somebody managed to get in, because I think the canal was about 6 or 7 foot deep. We managed to get in and get these sheep out. But
did you get the blame for that?
Well, not really. I blame the dog, I think. But that happened quite a lot. But and we also had some friends through the church, the lock keeper at Woodlesford called Grubb. And we became quite friendly in the family. And I used to go down and play down there, which my mother thought was always very dangerous, you know, crossing this old rickety bridge across the canal. And quite often, there were nearly horse-drawn barges. I don't remember how brave I was, but there'd be the chap on the barge, and I were leading the horse, one of these big type of shire horses, and half of the time I'd be falling into the gutter, you know, and we'd go to the next lock. I think that was Lemon Ride Lock, it was called, I'm not sure. And then usually I managed to get a lift back on another barge, and it was always the practice that the barge people had to pay a penny to the lock keeper to let them go through.
Let's go back to the station. You're talking about what you call the traffic, all the goods that came in and went out. Right. Just describe the layout of the station for me. What was actually there at the station?
Yes, well, the station buildings, which you've got on the photos there, they were the same all the years. Of course, they never altered them to any degree. And then there was one big warehouse just below where the station house is. It was kind of built into a kind of the side of the garden, which was the station house garden. It was just built there. It was a pretty big warehouse because not only a warehouse, there was actually a railway line inside the warehouse, and they were able to put the vans and all sorts of things in to unload.
And what was it made of, that warehouse?
Well, certainly made of wood. It was a wooden built thing. I'm just trying to think of the roof. I think the roof might have been a kind of wood. Oh, no, it might have been a slate warehouse. There was a crane in there which could lift, I think, up to about 10 tonnes, so they could lift heavy stuff onto what was like a big wooden platform, and then onto the lorries which backed in from the other side.
And do you remember what colour it was painted?
It was, I think it was kind of painted black, whether that was to do with the early part of the war, or it was perhaps just a natural wood colour, but it did event, you know, went into disrepair. And it was rather funny, really, because around about the time that I was working there, that was 1942, 1943, a large part of the warehouse had rotted away. The big doors, which opened like onto the railway line so that the railway trucks could be pushed in, they had all disappeared. So as far as a warehouse for security, it was non-existent. But onto where the lorries used to back in, there were some big doors with a little door that you're supposed to lock at night to secure the place. And there was a big key which was kept in the booking office. And although the doors had disappeared on one side of the warehouse completely, the goods porter, who used to lock up at night, used to conscientiously go and lock this door and bring the key and put it on a nail in the office. But they weren't locking anything up. There was nothing to lock up. It was so funny. And he would not. He was said, leave that to me, I'm going to do that, and he did it for years. It was unbelievable, really.
What about the goods yard itself? What can you remember about that?
Well, the goods yard as such, there was a big crane there, which I think was up to 10 or 20 tonnes. It was quite heavy, which was all cobbled, the yard, and I think it probably is to this day. I don't know, it might have been tarmacked over. It was just basically a yard as such for the lorries to park. There was nothing else, you know. It was all done between the railway trucks, which were right up to this, where the car park is now, and, of course, the warehouse. It was all done between those trucks and the warehouse. And the lorries, of course, just came and parked in the, what is really basically a car park and was in them days.
And how many trucks and lorries would be in there at any one time during the 1930s?
Well, in the 1930s, there were probably no more than two. But then, of course, it got busy towards the, before the war started, 1943. There was what they called a buffer depot just up in Alton there.
Right.
So you had Royds.
Yeah.
There was this huge, I don't know, it's all have gone now, huge kind of a factory built with all security all round. And regularly used to get a train in, probably about once a fortnight. And it's bringing all the stuff that was on the ration and was taken under real security up to this buffer depot. Butter, cheese, sugar, you name it. A lot of it come from Canada and places like that.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And it was there to be kept, you know, as the rations, depending how long the war was going to go on. There was always traffic coming in. Which was delivered by the lorry drivers, which I say was mostly just two.
How many tracks were there in the goods yard?
You've got your two main tracks, the up and down, that was for the main express trains, everything. And then there was just one line came off, which was for the goods traffic. It was shunted in, so to speak. And that was the one on that side, what we would call the downside. I don't know if you know, but the track to London, whatever it was on the British Rail, was always the upside. Well, the upside, there was another line off just past the signal box at Woodlesford, which went not only to Bentley's Brewery, also through to get to Walter Haig, which came off the main line and then went under the main line up Eshel Lane to the pit. You know, one thing I remember is the train that brought the miners, which I understand was called the Paddy Train. And it was the employees from Water 8 Colliery would all come from Leeds. I mean, I thought it was between about 5 and 6 o'clock, and they were all miners for Water 8 Colliery. So they used to get off at Woodlesford and then walk down the line, which I think whether they should have done, I don't know, which was the easiest way to get to the colliery.
Let me stay with the goods yard, though. Yeah. How did the wagons get off the train and into that goods shed?
All the freight traffic came from Hunsley, from Leeds, and they used to call it what was a trip. It always had trip number so-and-so, and that used to come regularly every morning about 9, 10 o'clock. It used to come into Woodlesford Station and then off the up line as if it was going to Bentley's Brewery. The engine was detached, it used to run round the train, back onto whatever wagons or vans there were, and then, of course, they had to do it in line with the signalman, to cross over all the lines to the line that was on the station house side, detach the vans and leave them. And then it used to manage to get back onto the main line from just a bit of track that was left for it to do that. That's the engine. The vans were then left then, and the lorries could get right up alongside the vans and unload that, you know, from that point of view.
There are signs at the station that there used to be wagon turntables. Were they there in your time?
There was just the one turntable, which was for turning the vans around and taking them out again, you know, depending which way they wanted to take them out. They could take them out either side of this freight line at the station.
How did they do that?
Well, there was always an engine to do that, yeah. If they wanted to move the vans while they were stationary, The porters themselves used to move them. They had this long wooden kind of pole, and they used to lever it, the wagons, and move it that way. A bit hard going, but that's what they used to do.
So they used that turntable then to spin the wagon round to get it into the goods shed?
No, the turntable was near to the station platform itself. No, they used to be able to manoeuvre the wagons from this freight line into the goods shed with these poles, these big long poles. That's it. It was hard work, but that's how they used to do it. Oh. Yeah. No, there wasn't enough space to get an engine to push them in. You know, it was a straight line, and then that was, say, that handled the doors, so the trucks had to be manhandled there, and then they could just push them in that way.